Is this normal? It's probably nothing serious. Maybe I'll feel better tomorrow.
Emergency symptoms can be good at hiding. That's why you shouldn't ignore symptoms like chest pain, high fever, trouble breathing, or severe stomach pain. They could be a medical emergency in disguise. Thankfully, an Eastside ER is ready to serve you 24/7 with fast wait times and dedicated ER experts, so we can quickly help turn your questions into answers. Visit eastsidemedical.com.
Broadcasting live from the Subaru of Gwinnett studio inside the Sonesta Gwinnett Place Atlanta Hotel, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio is cared for by Eastside Medical Center, providing quality care to Gwinnett County and the greater Atlanta area for over 38 years.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Subaru of Gwinnett studio here in the beautiful Sonesta Gwinnett Place Atlanta Hotel. And as always, Gwinnett Business Radio is cared for by Eastside Medical Center, and this is our monthly Eastside Medical Center specialty show. And today on the program, we're going to be talking about mental illness, what it is, how it's treated at Eastside, and also we'll discuss the stigma that still seems to be attached to mental illness. And we've got two great expert guests here on the show today. Joining us from Eastside Medical Center is Jared Rowe. He's the VP of Behavioral Health Services, and Dr. Joshua Morris, who's the medical director there at the Behavioral Health Services area. And Jared and Dr. Morris, thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Before we get into mental illness, what it is, how you guys treat the patients and so forth, let's talk a little bit about your background. And since you've been there a little longer, Dr. Morris, we'll let you start.
Thanks. Yeah, I've been there for about 5 years now. Before that, I graduated from the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta. I went and did a psychiatry residency in New York and Long Island at Long Island Jewish. Just after residency, I moved to Mount Sinai in New York City. So I worked 2 years there as an attending psychiatrist, where I were taking care of patients, but also teaching medical students and residents. Good opportunity to learn there with some of the best minds in the country. From Mount Sinai, I wanted to move to Georgia, and this opportunity presented itself. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Georgia, so I wanted to come back home. So I came down here and had the opportunity to become medical director. I also was able to restart the ECT program, which I run there at Eastside. So it's been really nice.
Great. Glad to have you here today. And Jared Rowe, your background?
Well, I'm the new guy at Eastside, just relocating here from Birmingham, Alabama. So Eastside is a new and exciting adventure for me, but I've got a long background in mental health work. Been a clinical social worker for about the past 12 years, and worked in hospital management and behavioral health services for about 10 years. Went to graduate school in Alabama. I am a clinician by background. I'm a clinical social worker. I have a master's in social work. But really excited about being on Team Eastside here in Snellville, Georgia.
Well, we're glad to have you both here. So now that we know the credentials, let's talk a little bit about mental illness. And Dr. Morris, we'll start with you. For those that are maybe not familiar with the term mental illness, what does that mean? What would a mental illness be?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's really a broad term.
Yes.
It really encompasses anything that affects behavior, or affects your mood, or affects your ability to perceive reality. So that can be a lot of things, from major depressive disorder, what people call depression typically, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, things like that. And then something as simple as anxiety. Even dementia is included in mental illness or a psychiatric condition.
And Jared, would you add anything to that definition?
No, I think that's a good summary. I think it's the breadth of the types of conditions that we work with that make these illnesses difficult for folks to understand and difficult for folks to know, you know, how to connect to treatment too.
All right, let's talk about what you provide and the overview of the services you provide and offer to the community in regards to behavioral health at Eastside Medical Center. What are some of the services that you do provide, Dr. Morris?
At Eastside right now, we primarily offer inpatient services. So that means people who are ill enough that they need to be in the hospital in order to be safe. that encompasses adults and geriatrics. So we treat anybody from 18 and up. We can treat anything from, like we mentioned before, depression, schizophrenia, those sorts of things. In addition to the inpatient services, I run the ECT program there at Eastside. And so ECT stands for electroconvulsive therapy, what people used to call shock therapy. And that is the treatment that we use for depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, but usually in patients who are treatment resistant, meaning they haven't responded adequately to trials of medications.
I gotcha. And even though you've only been there 5 years, it's good to know that Eastside Medical Center has been ahead of the game, and they've been working on this and offering a lot of these services for over 20 years now. So that's really good to see. Let me ask you this, Jared. What are some of the conditions that you commonly see and treat? And I know you're not just treating conditions, but you're actually treating human beings.
Right. And that's, I think, the most important thing not to lose sight of is that we treat conditions like major depressive disorder. Like Dr. Morris mentioned, we treat a lot of bipolar disorder. We treat some dementias in older adults. But our treatment team is really focused on not just making sure that we arrive at the right diagnosis for the patient, but that we consider what the impact of that illness is for that patient and their family. You know, mental illness is the number one cause of occupational disability in this country. And so these conditions take a toll on people's ability to keep families together, on people's ability to hold down steady employment and earn a living and those kinds of things. And our team is really focused on the whole person.
Yeah. Let me ask a question that a lot of folks may have. Let's say they suffer from a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress and so forth. How does one know when it crosses the line into a mental illness?
Well, I think when we look clinically at the different levels of treatment that we offer and the difference in maybe someone who has some social anxiety and sees a counselor or is going through, you know, some relationship issues and sees a counselor, we're really looking at the severity of the illness and the impact on their daily life. So, for example, there's a big difference in having anxiety that makes it difficult to go into busy shopping centers, for example, and anxiety that's so severe that you can't go to a job, you can't work around other people. And I think, you know, the inpatient services that we provide at Eastside are generally for folks who are experiencing that more significant distress in their daily life and dysfunction.
I'll just add a little bit to that, and I would say that the definition, if you look in the book that we use to define what a psychiatric disorder is, you know, they almost always have significant functional impairment. And so that's important because you have to look at the baseline of the person, not just how they're doing, because a very high-functioning person, somebody who is running a business, that sort of thing, they may have significant functional impairment, but still be able to work, still be able to hold down their job, but they're not functioning as well as they should be or would be otherwise. And so I think it's important to help people understand that there's a lot of things that we can do, even if you're still able to live fairly well, still able to do pretty well at your job and that sort of thing. And it doesn't always involve medications. And I think that's something else that people get hung up on, is they don't want to be labeled as something if they're taking a medication. And sometimes medication is not indicated.
I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people might think, okay, you got a mental illness, I'm going to go to Eastside Hospital, they're just going to be some kind of a prescription and medicine, and that'll be it. But there's a lot more layers involved, isn't there?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the challenges that we face in the hospital environment and treatment is, you know, the way that that mental health treatment, counseling, psychiatry is portrayed maybe on television or you know, in the mainstream media, isn't always congruent with how we actually practice. And so I think one of our biggest challenges on the front end when folks are starting a course of treatment and they're really not sure what to expect is to lay out those expectations for them so that it isn't a scary situation or something that's intimidating, but rather it's getting treatment for a health condition that you have, just like any other condition that we treat at Eastside.
Right. And you brought up TV, and I know mental illness, it's portrayed differently perhaps in TV and in movies and so forth, and that's really all that a lot of people know. But so there's still, I know, a lot of work to be done in today's day and age to break through the stigma, if you will, that's unfortunately still associated with mental illness. What is Eastside doing to shift the social and systemic barriers for those that are living with a mental illness?
Well, I think the breadth of experience that we have on our team is part of how we make sure that we equip our patients to be successful in spite of stigma. So we have a team of very experienced clinical social workers, a team of counselors and other types of therapists who work with patients to make sure that they're as functional as they can be in all of the different ways that we interact with the world every day. We've pretty aggressively looked for ways to partnership with other community agencies so that we're, for example, engaged with Navigate Recovery, which is a local program here in Gwinnett County that works to treat folks with substance use disorders and refer those folks to the proper level of care. We work with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is a grassroots kind of patient advocacy organization. And it's through those collaborations that we connect patients to resources that they need to advocate for themselves in their own treatment.
Dr. Morris, what about those folks that may still not seek the treatment they should be seeking because they're concerned about this quote-unquote stigma?
I think it's important for the family to be involved. A lot of reluctance to get treatment comes from family ideals. And so, for example, if you feel like you know, your inability to be happy, to be in a good mood, makes you weak or makes you crazy, something like that, then you might be reluctant to admit that something is going on. So for the family, it's important just to accept the person where they are, offer to try to help them, to find resources, that sort of thing. The other thing is, you know, unfortunately we do sometimes have patients that have to come to the hospital involuntarily, you know, because of some things that are going on, and if they present a safety risk to themselves or others. So it's one of the parts of my job that I don't enjoy, but I understand it's necessary, and we try to work with the patient as much as possible to help them understand that, not that there's something wrong with them, but that they're not doing as well as they could. And
right.
I can probably help them do better if we work together.
We're discussing mental illness on the special Eastside Medical Center edition of Gwinnett Business Radio. Our guests are Jared Rowe, he's the VP of Behavioral Health Services, and the medical director, Dr. Joshua Morris, with Behavioral Health Services as well. And Dr. Morris, you mentioned family, and so I know the environment around the person that is suffering from mental illness, that's got to be at the highest level to help foster the care. And I know that's important at the hospital as well, to surround them with the highest level of care to get them better.
Yeah, the family really is critical. You know, we routinely see the patients who are doing the worst are the ones who don't have family involved. And that makes it really hard for a lot of reasons. One, you don't have anybody on the outside encouraging you to do the things you need to do, whether it's taking medications or go to your appointments or eat healthy. But then even something like figuring out where somebody's going to go when they leave the hospital. If they're homeless and they don't have a family member to let them stay there for a little while, they may end up in a shelter, or we have to send them to a place that houses people, like a personal care home, something like that. And it makes things a lot more difficult, or having a family there makes things a lot easier. I guess I would put it that way.
That brings up a point that I want to ask Jared, is Is a mental illness ever completely go away? Can you I had a mental illness years ago, but now it's gone. Does that happen, or it's something that for the rest of your life you need to regulate and keep an eye on and work on, whether it's with therapy or with a prescription or whatever the case may be? Well, they don't magically just disappear after time.
Right, and that's a great question. And, you know, Dr. Morris certainly could speak probably articulately to the different types of mental illness that are more episodic versus those that are more chronic. But it's one of the things that those of us who work in the field of mental health treatment struggle with ourselves, because we do often see patients who we've seen for a course of treatment, and then they have a period of relative wellness, and then we see them again. And it's one of the most important things for us to teach patients that most of the conditions we treat are chronic in nature. And so when patients come into the system of care expecting, they oftentimes come into care when they're in a crisis and they're desperate for treatment, desperate to get well because whatever symptoms they've been experiencing are so, you know, unpleasant. And so we work hard to help folks understand that we can get you better than you are today. But if you have a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, for example, that's a chronic condition. And so it's kind of, there's no other medical condition where we guilt people for not getting better the way that we sometimes do with mental illness. So for example, if you're diabetic, we don't expect you to just be undiabetic one day, you know, mm-hmm. Or to that you've had one admission to the hospital and great, now you don't have to deal with that diabetes anymore. And sometimes families and folks who don't understand can be a bit unfair with their expectations for folks that are dealing with mental illness. So I think that's a great question. It is something we work hard to educate folks about.
Yeah, I think all that's right. There are some illnesses that that can be treated to completion and they don't come back. But it's true that most things in psychiatry either come back in episodes, as Jared mentioned, or they never completely go away. Something like schizophrenia, most patients are probably going to have some symptoms throughout their life. What we're trying to do is to mitigate those symptoms, to decrease them to the point that they can function as well as possible.
Curious question. What is the percentage of the general population that you would say suffers from a mental illness?
I think it depends how you define it, but I don't have those numbers exactly. What I can say is that a large percentage.
Yeah, I think about 25% of the population at any given time have some kind of, in a given year, have some kind of diagnosable mental health condition. But it is really important to understand that when we talk about mental illness, like kind of what we were saying in the beginning, it is a really broad group of illnesses. And, right. You know, so we can be diagnosed with an adjustment disorder, for example, that tends to be temporary and gets better with some treatment, versus something like Dr. Morse was saying, schizophrenia, that tends to be a lifelong issue.
I'm amazed when you say 25% or one out of four, because I was thinking it was much, much lower. So that's a pretty substantial number. How do we get past the stigma then of the mental illness? Because it's obviously more prevalent than I even thought. I'm assuming being able to openly talk about it, like we're doing here, is a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think things like this. I have had a few occasions where I've got to go and speak to the public about, especially about ECT, because obviously there's a...
When you say ECT?
Electroconvulsive therapy.
Okay.
So that has a huge stigma attached to it still. And that's something that people, you know, don't think about. And if they do think about it, they think about it as a barbaric treatment, which it really isn't. But so I would say, you know, opportunities to speak with people. I think if we can encourage people to talk to their loved ones, friends and family, that sort of thing, about their own experiences, that would help. What happens is people are reluctant to talk about these things. Because everybody else is reluctant to talk about them. But if you get in a room with somebody and mention that you have depression, there's a good chance that somebody else in the room is going to say, you know, I've dealt with something similar. I've had anxiety, and yeah. My son has schizophrenia, and You know, honestly, the reason I said we're not sure about the numbers is it's hard to know because of these reasons.
Because not everybody will come forward.
That's right. Yeah, not everybody seeks treatment. And so this 25% number, one in four, you know, I think most psychiatrists would agree that that's probably an underestimate, to be honest. You know, it's, even depression, depression has a rate of about 20%. It's a little higher in women, so in women it might be 25%, in men it might be 15%. And so if you include depression and anxiety, things that may not get hospitalized, it's probably even more than that.
Well, TV and the movies don't help when you're trying to help people understand what a mental illness may look like. I know at Eastside you have a care team that collaborates to develop individual treatment plans for your behavioral health patients. Talk to us about the team members that are involved in patient care. You have physicians, nurses, therapists. How does this team approach benefit the patient?
Well, basically you have different specialties with different skill sets. And when you get all of them in a room together, they're going to have different perspectives on the same patient. And so what happens is you get a more complete picture of what you're dealing with. So anytime you understand something better, you're going to be able to handle it better. And so when we have treatment team, for example, we come together, we will talk about a specific patient at a time. You know, we can talk about how the patient did that day, whether it's from the nursing perspective, whether they took their medicines, whether their blood pressure is high or low, their blood sugar may be high or low, stuff like that. From something like a creative arts therapist, you may get more about how the patient interacts with others, their relatedness. And so getting those different perspectives can be really crucial to helping the patient as well as you can.
And that team approach is really a hallmark of psychiatric medicine and inpatient treatment, mental health treatment, that we work collaboratively so that we can bring those skills to bear on patients, but also so that patients can collaborate. So we work from a concept called milieu therapy in psychiatry. So a psychiatric hospital stay, a lot of folks are unprepared for what that hospital stay is like, because one of the big differences in, let's say, an overnight stay in the hospital because you've had a surgery versus an overnight stay in the hospital for a mental health condition is that our patients spend very little time alone in a hospital room, in a hospital bed, watching a television, you know, or hooked up to an IV pump, for example. So our goal while patients are in the hospital is to keep them really engaged and participating in activities specifically designed by the therapists that they work with to, for example, we talked about reducing stigma. When we work with patients in group therapy and they're working through talking about their depression and they're working with five other people in the room who've had similar experiences, it immediately helps to normalize some of what they've experienced, which gets them on a, you know, kind of level set for treatment. So it is that team approach is definitely probably our strongest asset, I think, in mental health treatment.
I'm going to ask you a question here as we get close to wrapping up the show, and I'm going to think you both have a pretty strong opinion about this. The health insurance industry, they always seem to be kind of late to the game, and a lot of times they're got no problem helping. You know, well, you got insurance here to help a broken bone, but when it comes to mental illness, a lot of policies may not cover mental illness, and a lot of folks are afraid to maybe have it treated because it's not covered by their insurance company. Do you feel like the health industry, the health insurance industry, is maybe a little bit behind the eight ball and kind of needs to catch up when it comes to treating mental illness?
I think it's one of the unfortunate realities is that folks really oftentimes don't understand the difference until they're needing to access those benefits. They're needing to access those resources. And so, you know, we have folks who, one of the things that's different about mental health coverage usually with insurances is that most mental health treatment is covered by companies that are carve-outs. So, for example, we may have a patient who comes into the hospital and says, oh, well, I have brand X insurance. And that's true. You carry a brand X insurance card, but if you read the fine print in your insurance contract, your mental health benefits are farmed out to a subcontractor. And, you know, very oftentimes they have very different limits on coverage and criteria for what they will and won't cover. It's unfortunate. It's one of the mental health parity is one of the things that in our industry or in the insurance industry you've heard talked about since the 90s, and we're still not quite there where we need to be.
Yeah, I think that a lot of this comes from what was a noble effort at the time in trying to deinstitutionalize people. In the past, we had people, and they would be locked up, usually involuntarily, for months or years to treat psychiatric conditions. And in an effort to make things more more humane, there was an effort to take those patients out. Unfortunately, what's happened because of that is now we've got this idea that we can treat psychiatric conditions very quickly, and it just simply isn't true. Even if you can get somebody on a regimen, you know, a medication regimen that's likely to help, a lot of the medicines take a while to work, somewhere in the order of 2 to 4 weeks. So because we don't want to see people locked up involuntarily, which is right, we often don't let them get the help they need because of cost or because of trying to be as compassionate as possible. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a swing in the future where we start to see that I think it is compassionate to allow somebody to stay in the hospital for as long as they need to feel better, to get to the point where they're not a danger to themselves or others, or more importantly, they're not likely to become a danger again, because that's what happens so often is they will get better in the hospital, and then shortly after they leave, they decompensate because they weren't able to get their medications or they chose not to get their medications. But if you can get somebody really stable, which may take months, the odds of them remaining stable are a lot higher. Mm-hmm. I think the cost to society would be a lot lower if we just spent a little bit more up front in terms of time and resources.
I'm going to close the show by asking you each the same question here, and I'll get your answers. I'll start with you, Dr. Morris, first. For that person that may be listening to this show, and they think, okay, you know what? I may need a little help myself, and now that I've learned a little bit more from listening to both of you, or there's someone in my family that I believe may have a mental illness, what would your advice to them be? What is the first step? What should they do?
I think the first step is if the person is not in immediate danger, if you're not really concerned that, you know, they might take their own life, they might hurt somebody else, that sort of thing, then the best place is to start with an outpatient psychiatrist. Okay. You want to try to establish care with somebody just like you have a primary care doctor. You need to have a primary psychiatrist, somebody who follows along with you on a long course that knows you well and can kind of adjust things as time goes. Because even when people are stable, whether it be regarding hypertension or major depressive disorder, sometimes you need tweaks in your medications. And it's a lot better to have somebody that you know before you get in a crisis than to try to go to an ER and then establish care. Because even if you do end up in the hospital, which is, you know, obviously not optimal for a lot of people, if you end up in the hospital, I can treat you, I can take care of you, but then when you leave, I have to find somebody else to help you after that. And there are not enough psychiatrists in this country or in Gwinnett County specifically. And so it can be hard, and even when you find somebody, there's often a long wait. 2 weeks or more, and in 2 weeks a lot can happen, and you can really decompensate quickly. So that would be the first thing, is just to look for somebody that you like working with, that you trust, because if you don't trust your doctor, you're probably not going to be making the best decisions. So I would look for that, and you know, people can they can look on their insurance company website. They can get lists of doctors in their area or relatively close that can see them based on the insurance. The other thing that I think people forget to consider is that even if your doctor is out of network, a lot of times you still get some of that compensated. And so I would encourage people to look outside of those lists too, because whether it's true or not, I'll let people decide for themselves, but there's a stereotype that the better psychiatrists are the ones who don't take insurance. And so I would just encourage people to consider that as an option. See somebody, pay them cash, and then have the insurance company reimburse you. Sometimes that can work out better for you.
Jared?
Well, I think it's also important to just point out that when folks or their families are at that decision point, that we can help guide folks through that too. One of the things that we're really fortunate to have at Eastside, because we have two full service emergency departments, we staff those emergency departments with an intake and a psychiatric intake and assessment department as well. So at any given time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we have two master's prepared psychotherapists or psychiatric nurses on staff on site, who are able to assess folks who come into either of our emergency departments and help the emergency department team and that patient to figure out where they are on that journey and whether, you know, inpatient hospitalization isn't always the outcome of that visit. We make a ton of referrals to outpatient providers. We make a lot of referrals to support groups and the like. And even, you know, if you're not at the point of crisis, on our website, you can call, find the phone number for our assessment department and call them, and they take a lot of calls on any given day to help direct folks to those resources.
And we want to let people know that the website for Eastside Medical Center is eastsidemedical.com. That's eastsidemedical.com. You can go on there and find out about all the services that they provide, including in the behavioral health services area. Jared Rowe and Dr. Joshua Morris, Behavioral Health Services with Eastside Medical Center. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And before we go, we want to remind you that at Eastside Medical Center, quality care is close to home. Eastside Medical Center has been a community health care leader for over 39 years, nationally recognized for patient safety. Eastside focuses on delivering quality care with exceptional outcomes by utilizing the most advanced technology and experienced physicians. For more information on Eastside's system of care, visit eastsidemedical.com. And as we wrap things up, we are broadcasting from the Subaru of Gwinnett studio. Subaru, it's love. It's what makes a Subaru. Get big savings and enjoy their hassle-free experience. Subaru of Gwinnett, where people sell cars. Visit subaruofgwinnett.com and join their family today. Come on in and see the difference. If you're already a Subaruist, like I am, then follow Subaru of Gwinnett on their Facebook page for the latest Subaru offers, news, and community events. Again, a thank you to our guest for joining us here from Eastside Medical Center, and for Hope for all the great work she does in preparing these shows for us. Once a month, we take one Gwinnett Business Radio show and dedicate it to Eastside Medical Center, and today a great discussion about mental illness. And you can enjoy this program, listen to it anytime you want, 24/7, by going to businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Gwinnett Business Radio. For our producer, Trey, I'm Mike. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time here on Gwinnett Business Radio.